Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand, and I have on the show with me today John Haller in Ohio. And of course, John's a pretty frequently recurring guest on the show, and our discussions are always fascinating. And I've got to say, John, I always learn a heck of a lot from you, whether it's listening to your own broadcast or listening to you on our show. So it's great to have you back.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
And so, yeah, where do you think we should start off? Because there are honestly so many possible directions, so much happening. It's global chaos.
Yeah, it is. So let's just maybe we can just talk about global chaos in general and the different things that are going on.
Sounds good.
There's I was reading there's a website that I was just reviewing today called the International Crisis Group. And the International Crisis Group, they analyze crisis points around the world. And so they actually have a pretty good map up on their website right now. I don't remember what the name, if you just look at International Crisis Group, you'll find it. And they have sort of like the hot areas of the world in red. So, and this has been kind of an interesting phenomenon because it seems as if there's literally chaos and people taking to the streets everywhere. In South America, they've had massive riots. In Chile, the dictator of Bolivia was taken out by the people, removed by the people. They brought in this sort of conservative, I believe, I don't know what her religious background is, but she carries a Bible around, so she appears to be, some sort of Christian. And she was getting ready to retire, actually, from the legislature. And so she's sort of now leading the country. But the guy there, he deserved to go. He turned the country into a narco state. So you have Chile, you have Bolivia. Ecuador had some problems last month. I was just reading that the government is on the verge of failing in Uruguay. Argentina's had trouble. Brazil. I mean, so the whole South American continent just has these sort of large political problems right now. And it's always interesting too, is that a lot of these disruptions, these riots and protests and that type of thing have come about after something relatively minor has been done by the government. For example, in Chile, they raised subway or bus fare a little bit, and all of a sudden they have these massive riots going on. And I'm talking millions of people in the street. And even one of the articles I read was saying, wow, this is Chile. This is one of the most stable regions of South America. So you have Chile. The Ecuador thing seems to have died down. Bolivia is still in the state of function. In Mexico, we have a failed state. It's not something that I've even really talked about that much. Now, of course, we had the drug cartel attack that Mormon religious sect caravan of adults and children and killed a bunch of people. I do have some additional information on that. There's a friend of mine named Ed Decker, and Ed, when he was 19, converted to Mormonism. And for 20 years, he was a Temple Mormon. He was really into it, but then he got saved. And so he spent a lot of time over his career. He's in his 80s now. And still writing and everything, the Decker Report. And I heard an interview with him over the weekend, and he was relaying the fact that this Mormon sect was really a pretty extreme, even violent Mormon cult in Mexico. So that's not to say that they should be killed by the drug cartel, but it just shows that there's a whole area, even sort of the peaceful Muslims that were sort of portrayed in the press might have been a violent sect, but Mexico is in a very great state of disarray. I don't know if you remember about a month ago. And again, this is something there's so much stuff going on these days. And I try to look at the most important things that might relate to Bible prophecy. And so sometimes things get lost in the weeds. And one of the things that was when they tried to arrest El Chapo's son in one of the Mexican provinces, they arrested him. But then the cartel, the reports I have read from pretty reliable sources, says that the cartel actually started hunting down the families of the policemen that had arrested El Chapo's son and started torturing and murdering them. Now, that hasn't got a lot of play in the press as far as I can tell, but this stuff is going on way too many places now to dismiss it as just sort of a one-off. You know, this is just a unique situation. So we have, you know, South America, Central America. We have, of course, the problem with China and imprisoning the Uyghurs. The New York Times has actually done, whether you agree with their leftist orientation or not, they've actually done a pretty good job. And they had another big article today exposing documents showing what China is doing with this Uyghur Muslim minority in Western China. There's well over 1 million or 2 million already in re-education camps. China claims that they're job training camps is what the Chinese have claimed, which is, you know, typical communist propaganda.
Absolutely.
But I do think there's a close correlation between what is now being exposed pretty heavily that China is doing to the Uyghurs, this Muslim ethnic group in Western China, and the riots that have been going on now for 6 months in Hong Kong. Because I think the Hong Kong people are looking at it and they're saying, look, we don't want this. We don't want any of this to happen. So there were some elections yesterday in Hong Kong, and the result of it was there was support for pro-democracy, anti-Chinese results in the election. So that was encouraging. But it's anybody's guess what China is going to do. And China has sort of intimated that, look, we're going to crush this. We're not going to tolerate this, and we're just going to absolutely crush these people.
I think the people of Hong Kong have sort of got this mentality, from what I can tell, that says, well, we're going to go down fighting, because if we just give up, we're going to be put in that situation anyway, so we might as well fight till the end, kind of a thing.
That's right.
Yeah. The Chinese government's like a giant steamroller, though. Sooner or later, they'll flatten anything.
Well, but, you know, there's a lot of things going on in China, too, that we don't hear about. For example, you know, everybody talks about the Chinese economic miracle, but China's really taken on a lot of debt to achieve a lot of these, at least what appears to be, you know, incredible economic gains and improvements. It's been a while since I've seen anything about it, but, you know, I saw a number of stories on these ghost cities that China had built that could accommodate. There were a number of them, like a dozen or more of them, that could accommodate 2 million people, condos, shops, malls, airports, infrastructure, and the cities were by and large totally empty. Those had to be financed somehow. And I think what China wanted to do is they wanted to relocate people from the rural western part of China that's very, very poor. If you look at Chinese society, they have about 1.4 billion people, but only about 300 million to 400 million people actually really are active participants in the economic improvements that have taken place in China, and they have improved quite a bit. But the other close to a billion, maybe a little over a billion people live in some of the worst poverty conditions on the planet. So there really is a split in China between the haves and the have-nots. So China has not been able to get a handle on that. And on top of that, with their one-child policy, and this is, I sort of harp on this a lot, I think maybe too much, but it's a fascinating thing for me, is the demographics of the world. And when you relay that to Bible prophecy, and does it have any impact on how things might unfold or how quickly they might unfold? And when you look at that, you see there are a lot of societies around the world, and the leaders of these societies and these countries, they know that they're hitting a demographic wall. China, and let's just say the Lord doesn't return, but, you know, within 30 years, China will lose 400 million people in population based on the current demographic studies. So they'll go from 1.4 billion to 1 billion, but of that billion, there'll be an increasing number of aging population that really, you know, as you get older, in fact, we were just talking before we started about I'm at that getting close to that retirement age from work. And but China's a rapidly aging population. So if China's going to do some of the things they want to do to become this great superpower, they have a pretty narrow window, which only adds to the what I believe is the Lord's return is getting closer and closer. And the things that are prophesied in the Bible and the wars and rumors of wars, I think they're going to continue to accelerate and they're going to converge. So you have China with a demographic problem. Of course, you have Japan with a huge demographic problem. And this has been going on for 30 years now in Japan. You remember there was the Japanese economic miracle that was taking place back in the 1980s. And it was a big deal around here because they relocated Honda of America to about 20 miles from where I'm sitting, Marysville, Ohio. And there are, to this day, there are an incredible number of Japanese people in the area where I live. In fact, back in the 1980s, when I started playing golf, I would go to a golf course, and some of the golf courses out near Marysville, they would actually post their prices, their price list would be in English and Japanese. And it was always kind of, I didn't mind, it was just kind of disconcerting because this is the middle of America. And you have this huge influx, but that's completely died off for the most part. I mean, Japan still is an economic power, but they're aging and they're having trouble supporting that retired class. China is really on the verge and is starting to face that problem. The most rapidly aging country on the planet, though, from the recent studies I've read, is Iran. And Iran knows that whatever they want to do, if they're going to continue their power and influence, which I think they want to do, they have a short window in which they're going to have to do that. Well, we know that Persia is prominently mentioned in all the prophecies of the Bible. So it would seem to me that if modern day Persia, Iran is going to do these things that we expect them to do based on what the Bible says, then it would seem that these things are going to happen sooner rather than later. But of course, Iran is having massive protests. We have a pretty hot, I think, hotly contested border conflict in Kashmir between Pakistan and India. India has a massive Muslim population. Pakistan is a Muslim country. And Pakistan doesn't like the way the Muslims are being treated. The thing there is they're both nuclear powers. I'm pretty sure that the country with the greatest number of Muslims in the world today is India.
Wow. I never would have picked that.
I believe they have somewhere. Of course, I don't know what the population of Indonesia is. I know you don't live around the corner, but you live closer to them than I do. But I'm thinking Indonesia's population is somewhere in the high hundred millions, close to 200 million. I believe there are over 300 million Muslims in India. I'd have to double check that. But so this is a huge problem. In fact, a lot of people don't know that historically, probably one of the greatest massacres of humanity occurred in India, in the Muslim wars in India. It's estimated that the numbers that died in that time frame were between 80 and 120 million people.
When was that?
It would have been back in the like 1200s to 1400s, somewhere in that time frame. I'd have to look.
That's all right. It's near enough. Yeah.
It was a while ago, and it took place over a long period of time as the Muslims were expanding their empire. But it's one of these things that, you know, that Americans, we think in terms of the next news cycle. And with social media and the way things move rapidly, that means we're worried about tomorrow or next week. So tonight, all the stories in the news were, what's going to happen with the impeachment hearings? Because they're taking a recess this week. And it's sort of like, but I don't think in the East, the Far East, and India, China, and those other places, Iran, that they think in those terms. They don't think next week. They think 100 or 200 years down the road. So, and now the flip side of that is, if somebody has done something wrong to them, they don't care if it was 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago. They still remember it. You look at, for example, what happened in Eastern Europe and Serbia, Bosnia, and that type of thing. You know, there some of these Muslim attacks on a cathedral, I don't know when they happened, in the 13th or 14th or 15th century. But the people there, historically, they look like it happened yesterday. So when I see what Iran's doing, you know, certainly they want power now, but they're looking ahead and planning ahead 100 or 200 years as to how they might influence things. That's why, and it is a doctrine of Islam, you know, sort of jihad by immigration and having babies. So you see these type of things growing. You see there, you know, we see what's happening in Europe with the immigration of Muslims into Europe. It's destabilizing a lot of countries, and they really don't know how to deal with it. Because they want to be an open society. They want to be tolerant and all those sorts of things. And people are going to take advantage of those attitudes. So it's a huge problem. But if you look, particularly, I would highly recommend a website called the Gatestone Institute. I know it's considered far right conservative by a lot of people, but the people there, Guy Milieri and others, they are incredible researchers, and they look at these things, and they're a lot of their articles are very jam packed with historical references as to what happened. So this Muslim immigration that's happened is having a very destabilizing effect on the makeup, at the very least, the makeup of the culture of these countries. We were in England just exactly a year ago. I spoke at a conference over there, and we spent a few days in London before we came home. I think I might have mentioned this. I've mentioned this a few times. We were four blocks from Speaker's Corner, you know, the great freedom of speech place in Hyde Park. And the hotel, the Marriott hotel that we stayed at, had 50 channels on the cable. And 9 or 10 of them were Arabic language. And this is in the heart of London. Yeah. So it shows you the influence that these things have had. And so they're certainly in European countries, at least until they totally assimilate in the culture, if they do, they have a tendency to have much larger families. And so all the major European countries now are way below replacement rate. This also has an impact on geopolitics elsewhere. Russia has a tremendous Muslim problem. And I'm seeing more, some of the intelligence reports looking at things. I'll get back to Russia in a minute, that we have the Shia and Sunni conflict between their various sects. Although when you really push them to the wall, they sort of unite against the outsiders. But there's also an increasing conflict between what I would call sort of northern Sunni Islam and southern Sunni Islam. So you have Saudi Arabia and Egypt coming into conflict in opposition to Turkey. Now, Turkey is a big Muslim Brotherhood country. Erdogan has used the Muslim Brotherhood to establish his influence. He's been very good at it. I'm fascinated by Erdogan. I've studied him for a long time. He's actually 2 days younger than I am. But he has a lot more influence than I do. And he's very clever the way, for example, there are things I like that Donald Trump does, but there are things that obviously concern me. And what has been this whole Turkey, Syria, Kurdish thing. And I just think Erdogan's rolled over everybody on that particular topic. And he's pretty much gotten everything that he wants, but he's established networks in the United States. Even his opponent Gulen, Fethullah Gulen, who lives in the Poconos in Pennsylvania in exile, who was at one time allied with Erdogan. Then they had a falling out and he had to flee the country, and Erdogan still wants him extradited back, even though the guy's well into his 80s now. But Gulen has established a network of schools, Turkish Islamic schools here in the United States, under the cover of being science and academic oriented. But they're starting to exert a lot of influence because they're training up a whole generation of people. Again, they don't take the short-term view as to, what's our oil supply going to be like next week. They're like, how are we going to control the country? Erdogan himself has done this. He was a big mover behind the Muslim Brotherhood takeover that lasted for a short time in Egypt. I think that the Erdogan takeover of Turkey is sort of a template that I think other Muslim Brotherhood people will try to implement in their countries. And it is, so it's a big problem. So Egypt is aligning in great respect, in many respects now, at least the government, with Saudi Arabia, because they don't want to go through the Muslim Brotherhood thing that they did, that I think our president, Barack Obama, helped start when he went and did that speech in Cairo on June 4th, 2009. Still, I think one of the most important speeches of my lifetime, because of the impact that that speech had and what it caused. I think it actually was the catalyst for the Arab Spring, which is still with us now. We're 10 years down the road almost. So Erdogan takes the long view. He's seeding people. I mean, there's large Turkish communities in Germany and Netherlands and elsewhere in Europe, and they don't assimilate very well. They are very involved in Turkish politics, or even like campaign rallies when their major national political offices for Turkey. They go campaign because these people, even though they live there, they have not assimilated. They're still Turkish, and they will vote in the Turkish elections. So, and I just don't think Europe has a handle on how to deal with that particular situation. They're being outbred is the simplest, I guess, the crudest way to say it. So that's a big deal. In fact, yesterday I played, and I would recommend that people go and listen to it. It was in the first plenary section of the International Institute for Strategic Studies, IISS. It's available on YouTube. The head of the French Armed Forces, a lady named Florence Parly, or however you say it, she, P-A-R-L-Y, gave what I thought was a very interesting speech. In fact, I sort of grabbed my title for the update yesterday. She said the Middle East is an empire of signs. And I thought that the way she said it, and then she sort of went through her analysis of it, she was very critical of the United States and what she sees as our withdrawal from playing policemen in the Middle East. But she went through and she said symbols and signs are very, very important in the Middle East, more than any other region of the world. And we know that, you know, Bible prophecy unfolds to a large degree within the context of the Middle East. And I just found it was a very interesting thing. And then she went through herself and she sort of ticked off all of the chaotic situations, the riots in Iran, the riots and demonstrations in Lebanon, the riots and demonstrations in Iraq. And so there's tremendous turmoil in the Middle East right now. Syria is still in complete meltdown. It's not really, we call it Syria, but it's, we assign a name to it, but it's not really a cohesive country any longer. I mean, there's the Turkish influence in the Northwest, now the Turkish influence in the Northeast. The Kurds have been largely ethnically cleansed from the Northeast part of Syria. Last number I saw was that 400,000 Kurds from this buffer zone that Erdogan wants to create have been pushed out of that area. That includes a lot of Christians and relatively peaceful Muslims. So Kurdish Islam is a little bit of a different type than some of the other types of Islam. It's a little bit more tolerant. But again, it's everywhere you look, everything you pick up is just chaos throughout the world, and particularly in the Middle East. So that's geopolitics. The other place we have chaos is in Western governments. I mean, you mentioned climate change. The adoption of this climate change narrative is absolutely stunning. And I know you did a show on it, or a few shows on it recently. You can't pick up a newspaper and not read about climate change.
It's becoming totally insane the way they're pushing the whole agenda. And yet, you know, like, and it's that supposedly, I just saw a headline, an article the other day saying, oh, 2019's the hottest year on record. And I'm thinking, well, what a load of rubbish. And it may be the way they measure the climate has changed for a start, the way they measure temperatures over the years. It's like comparing apples with oranges, because they don't even do it the same way with the same equipment as they used to. But then they ignore things like this headline in the express.co.nz, UK snow forecast, coldest winter in 100 years as a three-month sub-zero freeze hits Britain. This would be another severe winter record to go after several in the past 10 years, and as such indicates Britain's winters are becoming colder and more prone to significant snow events. And, of course, you've had a very cold November in a lot of the US as well, but they seem to ignore these things when they're pushing this climate change scenario because it doesn't fit their agenda that it's the planet's supposedly warming, which is, I think, a load of rubbish. But here's another, you know, they're pushing for electric cars and things like that as well. And New Zealand is a zero carbon policy by 2050. And
good luck with that.
Yeah, well, what they're doing is sending people into the dark ages. But as you were saying about the demographics earlier, and I was thinking, well, actually, all of these things also fit in with their big agenda, which is population reduction. And the whole climate change thing is all a part of that, the zero carbon thing and whatnot, because that's what they want, ultimately, is less people in the world. So a lot of these other things are stepping stones to kind of get them there. But, you know, like electric cars, I saw this article in Forbes. More electric cars mean more coal and natural gas.
Saw that article today myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that puts it into perspective, all these people that are saying, you know, we need electric cars and all of that and stop the fossil fuels. But it's a load of garbage. It doesn't actually work. And they just want to send people back into the dark ages really with nothing. There was an excellent, like, meme kind of thing on Facebook today, which I don't have in front of me, but it was put out by, I think, New Zealand Farmers, basically saying, It was like these people as cavemen saying, yeah, well, now that we've got rid of airplanes and cars and everything, and there's all the, you know, just as cavemen and culled the last cow, now what? You know, and basically, well, it was very good.
Yeah, I had to laugh. I was actually on my way on a Sunday morning in Denver to speak at a church in July, and a Tesla pulls up beside me. And, you know, Tesla's a great car. I mean, it's kind of cool. It's performs very, very well. But the guy started to pull away, and I grabbed my phone and I took a picture of his license plate. It said zero carb. And I'm like, you know, Tesla's a pretty expensive car. And my reaction to that was, does the guy really believe that? And if he believes that, how does someone who's so stupid earn enough money to buy an $80,000 car? It just seemed to me that, you know, it just seemed very unfair that I was driving a little Prius rental car. But this is the insanity that we have. I don't think they think this thing through, but it's everywhere that you took it up. One of the great, there's I'm sure you can find the quote somewhere on YouTube. Rachel Maddow, she's a crazy leftist host at MSNBC. She'd been interviewed by David Letterman many years ago. And the quote that she said was, well, I think climate change means extreme weather of all kinds. So I guess they've sort of modified the global warming thing.
Yeah, but they're still saying the planet's warming supposedly, which it isn't. But yeah, they'll throw anything that as call it climate change. Well, like here in New Zealand, I saw this article the other day where some parts of New Zealand have got up to, you know, fairly high temperatures. I'm guessing early 90s. And they're saying, oh, we're still a week away from summer and it's already these temperatures and that's climate change. And I'm thinking, what a load of rubbish. We're a week, officially summer starts on the 1st of December, and you have a few odd spots here or there in the country that hit 90 degrees or 91 or whatever it is degrees towards the end of November. It's like, come on, that there's nothing really that abnormal about that. It's just that they'll jump on anything because –
yeah,
you know, to push the climate change narrative.
Well, it's supposed to be 60 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know if you.
A lot of our listeners might not know, but what? Yeah.
Well, it's 60 degrees Fahrenheit, and I don't have the conversion
thing
in my head.
I'm guessing it's about 17 degrees Celsius, give or take a degree.
Yeah, I mean it's a cool day, but. Warm enough you can go out in your short sleeves.
Yep.
So it's supposed to be that temperature the next 2 days here in Ohio. But then in Colorado, they're having a deep freeze. But the big concern here is, look, I think there's a lot of things that, you know, there's a lot of good research indicates we might be entering into sort of a mini ice age as opposed to global warming. Yep. But a lot of it's related to the sun. And I can't discount, too, either that that some of this is related to God's judgment on societies and cultures that have completely lost their mind.
Yeah.
I'm looking at an article from a week ago Sunday in the Sunday Review section of the New York Times. So I read the New York Times a lot because I want to know what, you know, it's sort of Satan's newspaper in one respect. So you can kind of get all these crazy ideas and figure out what they're talking about. But the cover story in the Sunday Review section of the New York Times was the end of babies. And what they're noting is that they looked at Denmark, which is considered to be this great social democracy where everybody is happy, but they're not having babies. And this is something that's really, I don't know that this has ever happened in human history. I mean, we've had times when, you know, massive parts of the Dark Ages and the Black Plague and things that came through Europe in those days, in that time period, have killed off a lot of people. But where people are choosing not to have children at all is very unusual. And the governments in Western Europe and elsewhere, are trying to, they know that this is bad. So China's gone from a one-child policy to trying to figure out how do we have people to have babies. And they're trying to do incentives in Denmark and I think in Sweden and some other of the, you know, the great happy-go-lucky, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Nordic countries where everything is supposedly great and services are fine. And the people are saying, but even with the incentives from the government, it's not worth it. This is stuff that really has not happened in human history. And I just don't think we have a handle on the implications of it. Now, I'm a Bible prophecy guy. I think things are getting closer to wrapping up. But I also try to take the long view. What happens if this thing doesn't change? Or what if this trend continues? One place where it hasn't changed, and they're still having a lot of babies, is Africa. And so demographic studies that I've read show that Africa, the population of Africa, is going to explode in the next 30 or 40 years to the point where there will be like 4 cities in Africa that will have over 80 million people in them.
Wow.
And one or two of those, Lagos, Nigeria, and I don't even remember the name of the other, because some of these are cities you've not even heard of, will have populations of close to or over 100 million people in one city. Well, now that's assuming that everybody stays there, but you know what they're going to do is they're going to move to where they think there are economic opportunities, and the closest place is Europe. And so Europe, if the Lord tarries, this world will change dramatically. I mean, this, and I think we're way past the tipping point on a lot of these things.
The other sides too, that adds to all of this, which are the population reduction agenda, which is the green thing ultimately, you know, and a lot of the elites above them, but you've got also the push for euthanasia. So you're culling people at that end as well. You've got abortions to stop babies. And then you've got this insane transgender thing, which is turning people into, and transhumanism as well, where they want to merge humans with machines. So you've kind of got this sexless society developing where everyone's completely confused and nobody has a handle on, there's no such thing as male and female anymore, except that, of course, you can't change whether you're XX or XY chromosomes. It doesn't matter if you have a transgender operation, you're still going to be one or other of those, so it doesn't change your genetic makeup. But again, it's sort of like that's another way of stopping the natural cycles of people procreating and having more people, because everyone's becoming this crazy washed out thing, you know, that's neither one thing or the other.
Well, I talk a lot about it quite a bit now. I posted my update yesterday in a few Facebook groups, and I was immediately banned from posting in groups that I don't manage for 24 hours. So I was put into a little bit of a Facebook. I can still post on my timeline, and I don't know why. And they said I violated community standards, but I don't know what community standards that I violated. The only thing, and I was very concerned when I did this, I played a video from a website called sexedschool.ca. And there are these series of videos there, and they show children, and these children are like 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and they're teaching them how to masturbate, and they have drag queens coming in.
It's just complete insanity. And
just insane looking people. Yeah. And the problem is, and I also played a clip from Palatine, Illinois, the Daily Herald out there that had covered a school board where they said that this is a controversy being raging in the district for a few years. Yes, transgender boys can now, who think they're girls, can shower and change in the girls' locker rooms. And the girls are like, I don't like this. This, what about me? Why don't they accommodate me?
Yeah.
And it is, and they're, every week I could spend my whole update talking about the push of this LGBTQ community. Dennis Prager had a very good tweet talking about the controversy over Chick-fil-A withdrawing some of its contributions. And while I think Chick-fil-A says, well, we didn't do this because of pressure from the LGBTQ community, I just don't think that's the case. I think the evidence is otherwise. And Dennis Prager's tweet the other day was, look, they fear LGBT because they don't fear the LORD. And I think it was appropriate. But this thing is sweeping over the country.
Not only America, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know if it is. It there. I assume it's there in New Zealand, yeah. Too, with your, you get that little leftist prime minister there.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Can I say that?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is it. It's, you know, we have. And she was just, I saw Fortune magazine calling her this, I think it was the second best world leader the other day. I'm thinking, well, with a title like Fortune magazine, yeah, you can understand why. Cause she's making these elite carbon people that a fortune.
That's right. Yeah. So that's a good point.
Yeah, but is kind of, you know, part of the craziness here. We probably haven't got quite the same level of that indoctrination that you're in that video with those trans people doing that here yet, but doesn't mean it's not going to happen. But it's just, I mean, it's just complete craziness, and no wonder kids are confused.
Yeah, and I don't know where, I don't know if .ca means that this is a website from Canada. It might be, but the whole thing, it really is troubling. And they have the Palatine, Illinois is middle America. It's the suburbs of Chicago, but yeah. It's well, compared to Chicago, it's fairly conservative, and it's just, it's everywhere you look, and it's causing a lot of confusion among kids and that type of thing. And I think this is one of the big, if I, you know, was ranking, certainly the transgender LGBT agenda and things that they're doing and the confusion and chaos that they're creating and the breakdown of morals is certainly would be in the top five.
Yeah, it's pretty massive, all right. Just changing subject a little bit because our sure. time's marching on really quickly. But
yeah.
I saw an interesting article the other day in shtfplan.com saying Republicans and Democrats agree give vast snooping powers to the U.S. government. Even in our polarized right versus left political paradigm, there is one thing both Republicans and Democrats can agree on. The federal government should give vast snooping powers and conduct mass surveillance on everyone. They simply disagree over who should be in charge of abusing these excessive powers. And that is really interesting because that is another thing that is happening everywhere, is this increased surveillance and basically the government having their hand in everybody's life on every area to every level. It's Orwellian sort of nightmare slowly encroaching upon us all.
Well, I'm a lawyer, and as lawyers, we deal with issues of discovery in business data. So I recently had a case where, you know, it involved some loans that we'd made to a person, and they're in bankruptcy. And the judge ordered us to produce everything that the bank had with regard to somebody. Well, it took us a couple of months because it was hundreds of thousands of pages of business data that had been gathered on this person, documents and emails. And I started looking through my emails on this particular case, and I had 1,200 emails that I had written over the last year on this particular case. Well, when I was a young lawyer, I didn't write 1,200 letters in a year because we couldn't afford the paper for in storage. And so... So, but I noticed that the chart that I saw showed that business data had increased by a factor of 10 over the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Personal data, data about individuals has increased like 50 times in that period of time. So it's got to the point, Tony, where if I want to buy something, and I look on the internet for it, In fact, I was just thinking this tonight. Oh, what was that thing that I wanted, that I was looking at this afternoon that I wanted to buy? Well, guess what? I didn't need to worry about it because I checked my Facebook feed and there it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's sort of, they're even thinking, reminding me of things that I forgot. And it's very troubling. But I agree with you that this surveillance society thing, like the influence of China, and I don't even know, as someone who tries to use technology as best I can, I don't even think I really got my head around what this 5G thing is going to mean. The ability to collect data on people. It's troubling. And I don't know that there's anywhere you can go that if you're going to participate in society that you can kind of get off the grid.
No, because it'll be beamed, you know, from satellites and everything. So eventually it'll be everywhere. And of course, like with China, with their whole surveillance system, with their 660 million cameras they're trying to have up by next year, that they'll be able to identify the entire population within 3 seconds. You know, so it's just like this whole surveillance thing, and 5G, I think, will play a big role in it. While everyone's running around thinking, oh, gee, it'll make the already fast internet faster, which we don't really need, and all these other things. It's crazy when you've got this increased technology on that one level and they're trying to send you back to the dark ages on another level. It's just like, you know, insanity.
It's a bipolar world.
It is.
The world elites are bipolar because they're operating in opposite directions. And I guess as long as they're making money and have their power, they'll be okay with it. But it is troubling that I see that, you know, it was even under Republican administrations that a lot of the surveillance things were brought in. You know, they built this massive surveillance center, data center out in Utah. There was a great, where would I read, in Wired magazine a few years ago, the amounts of data that they collect. And we see that it's abused. I mean, it's been abused by... It's probably being abused by parties on both sides of the ledger. In the world today, it seems like there's very interesting parallels between what's going on politically, sort of the chaos in Israel and the political chaos in the United States. And I think you could even throw the UK into that as well.
Yeah.
There are these impeachment proceedings against President Trump. I'm not sure that they'll eventually go anywhere. They are.
They're perhaps not ever intended to go anywhere. They're just a good distraction from everything else.
Yeah, I have trouble. I think some of these people actually believe them.
But maybe
they're all putting on a show. I guess I can't discount that possibility.
Well, I don't know. I think there's probably some at the highest level that are perpetrating the show, whereas a lot of the others wouldn't have a clue that they're just actors in the show.
Yeah, but you know, the big thing though is that there's really been no evidence brought forth. I mean, I think a lot of the testimony that I've seen is a bit of a joke. I'm not so sure things were handled entirely correctly by the Trump administration, but I don't think they rise to the level of impeachable offenses. I mean, the nonsense that I see coming from the Democratic side of the ledger on this is just absolutely stunning to me. But then the thing is, I look, you know, I read newspaper, a lot of different newspapers. It's pretty much 50-50 divide in this country. I mean, I don't know how we get a president elected if there's an election next year. I'm sure somebody's going to win. I don't know that the Democrats have any really viable candidates that have much of appeal to anybody. I think that Elizabeth Warren, lovingly referred to across the conservative spectrum as Pocahontas or Laya Watha, she may be the candidate. It's crazy. But, you know, suffice it to say that if the goal is to create a crisis in government, then I think they've done that. Now, the upside of it is that when they're engaged in these political shows, they're not out there enacting a bunch of legislation that's going to impact us, unless they're doing it, you know, this is covering up what they're doing in the dark.
Well, it's interesting, going back to that article in shtfplan.com, the House Democrats have successfully slipped an unqualified renewal of the draconian Patriot Act into an emergency funding bill, voting near unanimously for sweeping surveillance carte blanche that was the basis for the notorious NSA program. So stuff like that is still going on. And like I say, in the end, it's still pushing the global government agenda. You can have all these other sideshows going on, but the general trend of everything everywhere is still heading in the same direction. But everyone's distracted by the sideshows in a way.
Yeah. And then when you look at Israel, which of course, you know, in Bible prophecy, I think is a significant indicator, you have it looks like they're heading towards the third round of elections. They're in a phase for the next 2 weeks where any member of the Knesset can try to cobble together a 61 seat majority. At the same time, on this, you have this indictment, and I would highly recommend, I don't think we have enough time to go into it.
We're just about out of time, so. Yeah.
But Caroline Glick at Front Page Magazine, she gave a speech at Restoration Weekend. That's David Horowitz puts that on. And they have a transcript of her. So if you just go to frontpagemag.com and you can just type in Caroline Glick, it should be on the front cover. It's a very extensive thing. And Caroline has done, she's not a lawyer, but she is a very good analyst on these topics. And there's this design by these deep state elites to essentially remove things from sort of the democratic process to the judicial process. And so every time Trump does something, they run and get a nationwide injunction. Listen, I'm a lawyer. This stuff is insane. I don't know how they get away with it. And so, you know, the Republicans and the conservatives are sometimes their own worst enemies in that they believe in the rule of law. So when a judge says you can't do that, they'll just automatically fall in line and say, oh, well, I guess we can't do that. And so what happens is we don't have the rule of law. We have the rule of the lawyer. And it's troubling. And this is exactly what's happened by some of the basic laws and things that they were enacted in Israel, have given tremendous power to unelected lawyers and judges, to the point where, like in the Israeli Supreme Court, they get to choose their successors. Well, what do you think? Do you think they're choosing a liberal justice is going to choose a conservative person that might actually care about the rule of law? And what happens is they're able to put these things out. Now, listen, the indictments, that my understanding is, indictment of a Knesset member has to go through the Knesset. But right now we're in a situation where, is the Knesset constitution, is it properly formed to them to vote on the indictment? And the Knesset member can also seek immunity. But if they, let's say Netanyahu was able to get 61 votes for immunity, which I'm not sure he would get now, is it a valid vote that these unelected judges are going to accept down the road anyway? And so what you have is, when Israel does, I believe, face existential threats on a number of its borders, you have a country that's in chaos politically, and it's an opportunity for people to attack them, I think, militarily in such a situation. I think they could defend themselves, but it's chaotic. It's chaotic. And the other thing, and I'll just finish with this, I guess, is I was kind of going through things yesterday. I listened to that French ladies talk at the IISS conference in Bahrain. And I just thought that everywhere you look, people are really being set up for global governance and a one world leader. I don't know how else to say it. Because I think people are going to say, is somebody have a plan to help us deal with this chaos?
I had James Musker on the show talking about Brexit a couple of weeks ago, and he basically said all of these things are designed to basically show everyone that democracy doesn't work in the end. And so, we have to, the world leader, exactly what you're saying. And so Brexit's all part of that. They control the whole agenda, really, for this chaos thing, and in the end they'll be, we have to have this world leader in the global government because the people can't figure it out, and so on and so forth. So it's just we better look to wrap up. One last thing I'm going to say is another article that was out today in Breaking Israel News: half of Democratic congressmen demand Trump reverse US policy and declare Jews in Judea Samaria illegal. But what I find is interesting, 106 Democrat congressmen, including 12 committee chairmen, sent a letter to the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, on Friday, calling on him to rescind the US policy stating that it is illegal for Jews to live in Judea and Samaria. But the interesting part about it is the letter was led by Andy Levin, who's a freshman Jewish congressman in Michigan. So it's actually Jews in America, Democrats, that are pushing this or at the forefront of them. And then, of course, you get Omar and all of these others, Ocasio-Cortez and so on, joining in on it. But we haven't really got time to get into it anymore, I guess. But just sort of thinking about it. Again, it's just part of this whole crazy thing that's going on, really.
Well, it's troubling to me. And look, I'll admit that I support Israel. I don't think they're perfect. I think they do things wrong. But, I've been there a number of times, and we spent some time in the in Judea and Samaria when we were there 2 years ago. It had a huge impact on me. This is where the world says Jews can't live. And now half of the Democrats in Congress are saying this is where Jews shouldn't live. I thought it's clear that regardless of how strongly you support the state of Israel or not, this is what the Bible says it's going to be like in the end times. And this anti-Semitism and Jew hatred is growing. And I see it day by day on my Facebook feed. I see podcasts that I wouldn't say that they were ever supportive of the state of Israel, but they certainly weren't against it. And now I see some of these people ranting about the Jews controlling everything. These are anti-Semitic tropes that come right out of the elders of the protocols, or the protocols of the elders of Zion. It's prophetic. I'm going to fight against it. I think it's wrong. But I understand that this is where things are going. It's an incredible time to be alive. Let me just leave you with one thing, Tony. I was really kind of bummed out last week. I have my share of trolls that seem to want to criticize me or attack me or that type of thing. I came across a video from the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir, a song, Psalm 34. Go read Psalm 34. I closed my update with it yesterday. You can get that at Fellowship Bible Chapel or John Haller YouTube channel. And it's the thing we got to remember is ultimately God is in control of all of this, and God will deal with it. But that doesn't mean we can sit back and do nothing. But ultimately we need to take comfort and rest in the fact that God is in control.
Yep, totally. Yep, agree. Well, we're about on where we should be finishing, John. So thank you so much for being on the show again.
Thank you,
Tony. We'll have to come back and do another one in December before Christmas.
Okay, certainly we'll look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Excellent, thanks. folks, don't forget to check out John Heller's YouTube channel, Fellowship Bible Chapel, and also visit A Minute to Midnight, our website, aminutetomidnight.com. All of our A Minute to Midnight shows are on our website as well as YouTube and iTunes. And we run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations. I really appreciate it when people do donate. We can't keep this running without your help. So thank you to the people that do take the time and make the effort to help us out. It's hugely appreciated. All the music used in the shows I've written, played and recorded as well. And you can find the music on our website if you want to download it. So visit aminutetomidnight.com. Make sure you bookmark it. Like this video and check that you're still subscribed to our YouTube and iTunes channels as well. Catch you with another episode in a few days' time. God bless. Have a great week.